What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, or maybe you're listening later, wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever it is. We don't care. We love it all. We love every single last one of them. Like they're our own little babies, right, Pete?
Yeah. Speaking of which, happy birthday to Brooklyn, super fan.
Oh, I thought you were like to the borough, and I was like,
not the borough. No,
very nice of you.
Stray Bully's a lovely child.
Yes, one of our amazing Patreon supporters, good friend, official CBC chef, Brett Macris. Everybody knows he curates a cocktail for us every week, which we'll get to later on in the show. His son, Brooklyn, has a birthday. Happy birthday, Brooklyn. Also, happy birthday, Bronx. But I'm talking about the borough. Just to establish what we're talking about here. Justin is off this week, just so everybody knows. He has a family obligation.
His made-up actor family.
I'll tell you what,
doing contract negotiations. They want more money, and I don't blame him.
His pretend family,
his paid actor family.
Well, they gotta get the money in quick because the SAG strike might be happening,
Exactly.
Let's do a couple of quick riffs and takes. You've been working on your material about the SAG strike, so take it away.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Please pay those amazing creative people their money so we can get back to life as normal.
You gotta look up what stand-up comedy bits are.
I'll do some Googling.
All right, sounds good. Well, here's two people we don't need to Google. They are the creators of an amazing new book, which is out today.
Yeah.
Called Dear Rosie. Ladies and gentlemen, Megan Bowman and Rachel Briner, hello.
Hey, welcome.
Welcome. Yay, and congratulations. So excited you're here on your book birthday. Your book is out today from Random House Kids. Right?
Yes.
Is that the brand? Okay. Yes. I get a little confused with Penguins and the Random House and everything. So
it's the same thing.
It's the same thing. So. Yeah. This book is great. I love this book.
It's in the feels. It's so beautiful. It's so well done.
It really, really does. Just to sort of set it up, I assume the concept is out there. It's basically a group of kids in middle school. They're all animal kids, the way that you depict them in the book. But they're dealing with one of their friends died about a year ago at this point. And I thought it was a really, you frame it as sort of this fun adventure story, but it deals with this loss in a very palpable way. I know you talk about it in the back matter, but I'd love to hear you talk about the inspiration behind the book a little bit and why frame it this way for middle schoolers.
So Dear Rosie was definitely a reaction to our friend Annalie, who passed away when we were in college. And it was the sort of thing where it's like, I always wanted to do a piece of art about it, but it kind of needed some time to, let it settle where you can spend a lot of time with something that affects you deeply without being overwhelmed by it. So it was about 10 years ago that this happened. And we finally were able to put this into a pitch and get it picked up as our first book, which is really exciting as well. Mm-hmm. And it was really important to us to kind of like show like a slice of life from what middle school was like when we were all together as friends. So even though it's a fictional book, a lot of the stuff that happens really happened in real life. It's just taken out of order and adjusted slightly for pacing.
Yeah, that's one of the nice things is it's a book about animals, but the animals are so human. It's really transcendent. I was just so impressed with the whole thing.
Rachel, do you want to talk about why we chose animals?
Sure. Well, first of all, I'm glad that you liked the animals because they were a little contentious. They really didn't want us to do animals. It really shortened their list of who we could pitch to for that reason because they were just like, people just don't want animals. And it was really important to us, first of all, because it is such a personal story. It's like we felt weird designing these characters that were so dear to ourselves. It's like this is our actual friend. And like, the animals helped to set it, just like give it some space away. And then we also love the potential, especially in like with a middle grade story, just to be able to play up the acting with like their ears and their tails. You can really just do a lot more and like show those emotions in really fun ways.
Hmm.
And then also they reflect all of the nature of animals from Frederick, Maryland. So that's a nice little tidbit.
That's a very cool tidbit. I was very surprised to learn that at the end of the book. Were there other choices of animals, or did it feel like each character lended themselves to a particular different species?
We started with Millie, who's the main character, and we're like, all right, a deer makes sense for her, and we kind of just built off of that. And the people that they were based on were like, all right, I think this fits their personality. And then beyond that, all the side characters were purely designed and what made sense. We also wanted to have each of the five girls have a completely different threat, including in their heads. So like, even if it's like, tell exactly when you're looking at them, oh, that's Rosie, that's Millie, and you can just see the characters right away.
Now, I'm curious. I mean, you touched on this a little bit, but obviously you're aging this down from your real experience. Why was it important to set it in middle school? Was that more a calculated idea in terms of the book, in terms of the audience, or was there something more accessible in terms of that particular age group versus the slightly aged up group?
Both. We initially pitched it as a young adult book, and the editor was like, we think this works better as middle grade. And also, like, there's a lot more comics in middle grade. And young adults a little bit more kind of like it's feelings and emotions and less about like more specific kid-based plots. So we were like, we want to do something that really, that reaches the broadest audience for these kids. And also because most of the experiences that we were basing off of actually took place in middle school, I feel like it made sense to set them at the age that we were when those things happened.
Rachel, for you, from the art perspective, did you have to reach out to your friends to get likeness rights in terms of changing the animals, or did you just go ahead with it? How did that work?
Well, first off, the art we actually both did, and Megan actually designed
Okay, I'm so sorry.
no problem. It's a little chaotic, but I guess I'll go to Megan for.
You can answer that.
Okay. They told us that we really didn't have to. It was definitely a weird gray area where we were like, we did end up reaching out. Megan, especially to Anna Lee, the family of the girl who died, definitely wanted to reach out to them first and foremost to make sure it was okay. And I believe you did end up reaching out to everyone who was more than okay with it. They all just got their books today and they're very excited about it. And I don't think any of them have any issues with the animals that they are.
No, the only thing that was an issue was we asked our like family and friends. We like were like, oh, we'll draw you in as background characters, and that was like extremely contentious. People would be like, I want to be a kangaroo. I want to be a fox. And we'd be like, we have a fox main character. You got to pick someone else. They're like, I'm a fox. I'm nobody else. Like,
Speaking of somebody who, as a kid, was drawn as a bear in a series of children's books, you kind of you get over it, so it's okay. It's all good. You're just happy to be included. That's the main thing.
That's true.
I'm curious again, like, not to plumb too much into your real experiences, but obviously you're pulling on real emotion from yourself there. But at the same time, you're writing a book for middle school graders. And death is a tricky subject to talk about. So what was the modulation like there in terms of the writing process? What did you have to amp up a little bit in terms of the emotion, amp down in terms of the emotion? What was involved?
I'll let us both answer this because it's kind of tricky. I think that it was important for us to make sure we showed joy as well as sadness. So any sort of grieving process is complicated and everyone kind of handles it in their own way. But especially for kids, it's like, it's important for us to show them that like life can go on and should go on and you're allowed to still be happy while you're grieving. It's complicated. Like you think, oh, I need to be sad forever until I'm over this. And it's like, that's not realistic. So playing down a little bit, some of the more intense aspects of grief, because we didn't want to scare any children away. Either if this was something they experienced themselves and it was too much for them to read, or if they haven't read it and they're like, this is too intense, I don't want to look at this. We tried to kind of like downplay the individual really intense experiences and kind of like put it on the group as a whole to kind of to soften the blow and make it a little bit more individual in terms of what the characters were experiencing.
Go ahead, Rachel, please.
Oh, sorry. And to add on that, in the middle grade space, one thing that we learned is the importance of bringing in the parents as support group, as like supporting characters. That was one thing they kept reiterating over and over, which we found was very helpful, was like, make sure the parents come in here and like provide like support for them, and like trying to include more of those moments so it didn't feel so like isolating and alone in a lot of it.
I did want to throw out there, just because for anybody who's listening on the podcast, we're looking at some of the pages here live on the show. This Old Man Turtle character.
Yes.
What am I?
love the Old Man Turtle.
I love him. Is he a real person and can I meet him?
Yes, he was characterized more for the book, but I did live next to an old man that would get really mad about my porch light. And every time they'd be like, we can't sleep, the light's on. And they would just sleep with their blinds open. And I'd be like, close your blinds. But we just stopped turning off the light for months. And then one night at like 11:30 on a Saturday, the light had not been turned on in like half a year. I hear what sounds like breaking glass and then sweeping. And then I go out the next day and the old man has shattered the light bulb and swept up the remains. And I was like, what? Why did you do that? And then my landlord replaced it with a brighter bulb. So it was terrible for him. But that's who that character is based on. Just kind of like a weird old guy who just wants to get his sleep. And we kind of expanded on him. I didn't have that a really close relationship with him in real life, but he did break my light bulb in the middle of the night. So
there you go. Well, he's great. Definitely the breakout character find of 2023. I wanted to take a big step back actually and ask you, since this is your first graphic novel, why this format? Is this something that you've been playing around with for a while? Why did you end up jumping into this as your first book in a graphic novel format? Why was that important?
I'll let Rachel answer this one.
Do you mean this story specifically or comics in general?
Comics in general.
Sure. Well, I actually went to school for comic art. For me, it was never any other option because I'm not really like a writer. So for me, I've always been an artist, always been involved in like media and comic stuff like that. I think like when I first found like the indie alternative section of the comic store, it just kind of like switched that like that was what I wanted to do for a living, just like realizing how much art goes into a graphic novel. It's like, there's just like so much art, there's so much work that goes into it. And there's so much that you have to keep in mind, like the lettering, the panels, the colors, everything. And so I actually went to school for it. And afterwards ended up in animation, but comics were something that I always wanted to end up doing. It's just, they're hard to get into.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah.
Where did you, if you don't mind me asking, where did you go to school? I'm only asking in terms of like, we get a lot of questions sometimes about people who are like, how do I break into comics? How do I learn how to make comics? So I'm just always curious where people studied just to get that information out.
Of course. I went to Savannah College of Art and Design and studied sequential art, which I think there's not a ton of schools that have a specific major for comics. I think it's just that in School of Visual Arts.
Mm.
It was a good program though, so I learned a lot.
Well, I got to say, I'm just so sorry for your loss, but I'm so happy for this book. It really touched me and it's going to stay with me for a while. So it's just so powerful and so really well done. I'm just so happy that it's out there.
Thank you so much. That means a lot.
I did want to ask you, now that you have this, obviously it's been out for, I don't know, 12 hours at this point, something. But now that you do finally have that first graphic novel out there, what's next? Are you working on another project together? Are you working on separate projects? Is there anything else you want to plug in general?
Well, we're now mortal enemies and we'll never speak outside of this podcast.
Oh, wow.
All right. Well, thank you and goodbye.
No, in all seriousness, we're working on some other middle grade pitches, but we can't talk about them, unfortunately. But we're in the pitch process. We're there's another group of middle school grade friends, different group, not animals this time, that we're hoping to feature in our next book. That if it gets picked up, maybe it'll come out in like 2 years. We'll see.
Awesome. Hopefully we'll have you back on and we can hear all about it.
Yeah, that would be great.
Absolutely. Congratulations again. The book is fantastic. Everybody should go check it out, pick it up today. And I can't wait to see whatever is next from both of you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Have a good night.
Bye.
All right.
Man, what a book. It's just so, I can't say enough great things about it. I was just so moved by it. The back matter is so powerful. It's just,
It's a beautiful book. I think we probably could have touched on a little bit more for anybody who is curious to pick it up, because I know we have a lot of people who listen to the podcast or are watching who have kids. It's also a fun adventure story at the same time.
Oh, like,
these kids go on an adventure in this town as they are dealing with the loss of their friend. It's great. I really, really enjoyed this book a lot. Again, the book is called Dear Rosie. It's out right now from Random House Kids. That was Megan Bowman and Rachel Briner. Definitely check
not it out. Not a random house of kids. Random house kids.
Yes. And not a random penguin house or a penguin random house.
No, but, that's
but it's all
different.
The same thing.
I don't know why you're bringing up penguins.
I don't know. I love that publisher.
Problem, I think.
I do. My only problem is I need more penguins.
Penguins
well, anyway,
brain.
Why don't we bring in our next guest?
Yeah, let's do that.
For the show. He has a ton of stuff that is coming out over the next couple of months and years. Ladies and gentlemen, Shane Berriel. Hello.
Old friend of the show, Shane. What's up, man? Great
what's
to
up,
see
guys?
You.
All right.
Good to see you. Very excited to have you here. You have a ton of projects, but before we get into it, I just wanted to bring something up here. Now, as we mentioned, Stray Bullet, Breck Macris,
a.k.a. Stray Bullies.
Thank you. You're a little slow on the draw there, Pete. Anyway, he sometimes curates and creates cocktails for the show, and he created one this time that I'm going to bring up here. It is called Comic Book Cocktails Kill.
Nice.
Yeah, there you go. And I did not make it today. It sounds delicious.
You're not feeling well, that's why.
Yeah, I'm not
nothing
feeling
against
well.
You, Shane.
But I definitely had waffles. I was like, you know, the alcohol might kill the sickness inside of me.
Ooh, yeah.
But
yeah,
here we go. I'm going to bring it up. It is bourbon, dry vermouth, lime juice, simple syrup, orange bitters, and mint. It's based on your book. To be clear to anybody's listening, you have a book called Comic Books Kill that is coming out. About a dude cheating with his mob boss publisher's wife. Not a good look. It's a blend of mint julep, a horse race the mob had continually tried to infiltrate over the years to much failure, and a Manhattan. Perfectly refreshing for this heat, like a mint julep with the imbued corruption of a Manhattan.
Ooh.
So there you go.
He had me at bourbon, if I'm being honest.
All right. Well, we'll definitely send it your way. Just to plug all of the stuff that we can talk about that you have coming out, Comic Books Kill is coming out August 9th. Actually, before that, sorry, Jason, I had them in the wrong order. Jason and the Olympians is coming out July 26th. And next year, you have a book. Am I allowed to talk about this? Or
yeah,
you just...
yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Next year, you have a book coming out called Death Slinger. Which is a more of an intense, over-the-top action book. So why don't we go in date order? Let's talk about Jason and the Olympians, because that's coming out soon. This is a fun adventure book. Why don't you pitch the story here, if you don't mind, Shane?
Sure, absolutely, guys. Coming out from Band of Bards, July 26th, Jason and the Olympians, the titans of Greek myth, have returned. They've destroyed the earth and wiped out the pantheon of gods. And so it's up to teenage prodigy Jason Mukai to band together with her demigoddess clone friends to use their giant automaton colossi to defend the remnants of humanity in the form of the starship Olympia. Humanity's last hope, guys, is Jason and the Olympians. Alex Ogle, he's done a lot of, he did an alternate cover for The Amazing Spider-Man 75. He's done a lot of Marvel licensing.
Yeah,
art.
A lot of his art.
Is my co-creator. The lion artist here, who you're seeing, is Mattia Monaco, who's worked for Aftershock Comics. He's just, if you can imagine Sean Gordon Murphy with a manga edge, that's Mattia. And then Maya Opasek is my colorist, is the colorist on the book. She brings so much. She brings the Technicolor Thunder Boom. This is, you know, fans, if you like, think just a Fast and Furious more accessible, which, you know, I love Radiant Black, but this is, if you like Radiant Black, if you like Power Rangers,
Voltron, it's all
it's a love letter to, you know, the super giant robot genre in many forms, with females in the lead roles, but plenty of things for males as well. Like, we have one of my favorite characters is Damon Child, who He is kind of a behind the scenes vigilante. He's our, you know, keeping with the anime manga theme, he would be the Racer X of this universe, if you will, just to give fans a touchstone. So, but this first volume comes out again, July 26th. I'm hearing that the reorders are already happening, which bodes well. So,
congrats, buddy.
Thanks. So hopefully that's coming in. We're literally about 8 pages and a cover away from finishing volume 2. This is the OGN with additional matter will be coming out sometime in the near future following this first fully contained double-sized issue, which tells the entire story here.
Well, I love what you sent us. I really love the pacing to this as well. Like, you know, sometimes when you start a story, there's a lot to kind of get through, but you really did an amazing job of like kind of just cutting out stuff and giving us what we needed to start. And you led with some action that really kind of propelled the story in such an amazing way. The main characters are very relatable and cool. I just really blown away, man. It's been awesome to watch your work evolve over the years. You are killing it. I'm so happy for you.
Well, thanks, brother. I appreciate it. I owe that to the great team I'm a part of, all those people I mentioned. And, you know, you talk about you here. I'm not DC or Marvel. You know, I'm a small indie creator, so I've got a more limited budget, a more limited real estate. So, we try to get in and give that action-packed punch that we need, give the fans a fun story, relatable characters, all at once. This is, and the way we, Alex, my co-creator, and I came up with this book to begin with is, what is a story that, you know, an adult dad and his then middle school age daughter could read together and enjoy equally, nice. You know?
Yeah, what a great pitch.
Yeah, so
I love that, and I think it's very interesting to hear you talk about it. Like, just forgive me for saying this way, but scrambling for shelf space, particularly for more indie publishers. What has that experience been like for you? What is important for you as an indie publisher in terms of talking to comic book shops, getting that space on the shelf? What do you need to do? What are your steps?
A buddy of mine posted, who's also a comics creator, he said, man, just this week online, making the comic is the easy part. And he's not wrong. I mean, you know, I've literally called hundreds of shops, just tell them about the books. But I heard, you know, just to give an example, you know, and this is professional. I heard Matt Fraction, before he was Matt Fraction, he was calling comic book shop. He's working for Marvel, though, at the time. And, you know, and if Matt Fraction is not too good to do that, if he can roll up his sleeves and get dirty, then who am I not to follow his example and many other creators' example? You know, my projects, I consider them my children. So you guys, I mean, you're a pet dad, feat, and I know, Alex, you're a dad. So we all want our children, our pets, or kids as they are, to succeed. So we want to give them the best possible chance to do so. So, in other words, whatever it takes. So.
Well, cool. Let's talk about another one then that you're going to do, whatever it takes to get on the shelves. This is Comic Book Kills, which is coming out. I know we teased a little bit of the plot of this one, not to keep kicking it over to you as pitch man, but you're doing a good job so far. What's the pitch for this one, Shane?
Well, Comic Book Kill, 1939, New York City. Golden Age comics creator Jack Levi places his life and career on the line when he enters into an illicit love affair with the femme fatale mistress of his mob boss-backed publisher. So my co-creator, and whose beautiful art you're seeing here for the cover of issue one, the nonstop edition coming from Scout Comics, is Hoyt Silva. Can't say enough about Hoyt and just everything he's brought to the book as co-creator. Storytelling. He's done a lot of work for Scout Comics and others. Has worked closely with Brian Stelfreeze in the past out of the Gaijin Studios. So if you're fans of Jack and Stan, if you're fans of Brubaker and Phillips, you are going to love Comic Books Kill. It is a crime noir story that uses Golden Age comics as a backdrop. And this is the nonstop edition, which will begin be in stores August 9th. And here you're seeing it. We kind of lay it out on page one that it's kind of like Prohibition is over. And just one vice has replaced another. And Prohibition, it was booze. Now it's heroin. And the Prohibition era was pulps. Now it's comics. So the mob is using cheap Canadian publishers to bring in drugs on the backs of the, the printed comic books trucks into the United States. So that's how this all ties together and will develop through the course of the actual story. Again, this is a collector's edition, a nonstop edition, and the full graphic novel, which will encase five issues, will release thereafter. So
now, obviously, not the twist, but the additional thing you're putting into the story is the fact that it's set in the world of comic books, right? But both for this and the other one, and this is something that I think we actually talked about with another writer a couple of weeks back, noir, and with the previous story with sort of like the Voltron X giant robot stories, those have been done a lot. So what's important to you in terms of checking yourself when you're working in a genre like this to make sure you're not repeating what somebody did before and instead creating a new iteration?
Well, that is definitely an important, Alex, a point to consider. But the truth is, there are no new stories. There are only fresh ways of telling old ones. Mm-hmm. And it was that juxtaposition of setting this in a comic book world that appealed to me. And, you know, we get to use, it's not so much in this first comic, but we get to use the visual device of jumping between the actual Jack Levi story, the comic creator, and then kind of cross-referencing that against the actual comics, which is called the Skyway Man, who is actually, you know, a anti-hero, a thief as much as he is. And so I get to use, Hoyt and myself got to use that to basically back the plot and character and emotional beats of the story, which as it progresses, which that was really fun to do. So, first and foremost, I want to entertain. If I'm making a comic, it's one I myself would want to read. And feel I've not wasted my time, my money, and just have a good experience. And Hoyt with his art is just knocking it through the roof.
It's really beautiful.
We've got Micah Myers on letters. He's a Ringo Award nominated. He may have even won. I apologize, Micah. So, but I mean, Micah has worked anywhere and everywhere in this industry at this point. And then Kevin Lernitz and Hoyt are both on colors on this. So the team just did incredible work, and I'm just honored to be a part of it.
Oh, man, congrats.
Last but not least, this is coming out next year, so I'm not necessarily going to bring it up just because I don't want to
spoil. Bring it up, buddy.
Bring it up.
Spoil away.
Oh, boy, I love it. Okay, yeah. Well, this is called Death Slinger, and it's coming out in 2024. When you sent this one over, you said that, ooh, Pete is going to like this one. Oh, you know what? I got to import it here. Why don't you, while I'm bringing it in, why don't you give the pitch for this one?
All right. Death Slinger is just, it's basically a Western in space, which again, we've seen it, but this is just a balls to the wall, visceral, I mean, admittedly ultra violent, a tale, but of the Holy Reich in the future has fallen, but they used their mercenaries where basically these cyborg entities they created called Death Slingers. And it's just kind of their weapon. Ben Perkins is the artist colorist here. You're seeing letters by Keith Finch and, Ben, I know you've got this stuff, but just, if you can just see just the progression of his art through this book, you're seeing Gen E, and that's JEN/E is in Generation E. It's just a retelling of an old tale, be it, Red Harvest, Yojimbo, things like that in a space setting. And, it's admittedly, it's dark, it's gritty. This is the antithesis of Jason. If Jason is all audiences book, arguably, then Comic Books Kills an adult, then this, although it's fun, and I actually like the juxtaposition of the art, you see, because which is a little more, surreal, which Ben's done a great job. It kind of plays against basically the darkness and ultra violence of this book.
It works good. Yeah, I agree with you. It does a great job of because the art is a little bit brighter and stuff, the violence and stuff, it kind of, the juxtaposition is cool.
Yeah. And, I think that, and I don't condone violence in the real world, but I think this allows their Jungian shadow selves to basically get that out in a healthy way and to look at it and review it. And if as long as we're cognizant of that, that this is what this is, our base impulses that, you know, Jung would talk about and Freud and all those guys, which, I'm not a saint. I admittedly have them. So this is a great way to me deal with things. And it comes from an unconscious level. I'm going to segue here, but a book I wrote, Bad Mojo, I didn't realize until after I'd read it, till it was in stores, that I was dealing with feelings of helplessness I had at the time in my life, without going into graphic detail. And that's kind of what Death Slayer, admittedly, job one, entertain, have fun, look at those awesome visuals, say, oh yeah, that's cool. But at the same time, it just, you know, it helps you deal with these darker impulses and desires in a healthy way.
Well, appreciate that. Also, I just wanted to say I did love this, so thank you for sending this our way. This was really badass. And awesome. Pablo in the comments is pointing out it's got some Mad Max vibes. So,
oh yeah, absolutely. Cool. Yeah, yeah. If you dig, Mad Max, all those post-apocalyptic things, you're going to love this. Again, Ben Perkins is the artist. It's coming out from Cosmic Line Productions in 2024, an indie publisher, but good guys, and just enjoyed a good comics community with them. And again, Alex, you adjusted, may not be my target demographic. You know, that's okay. We don't all have to like the same things.
That's right.
I like a variety. I mean, Rachel and Megan's book, I was riveted while they were talking.
Oh, it's so good, man.
Yeah. So run out and get that, everybody. Absolutely. But on that, you know, I think variety for me personally as a reader, that's what I thrive on now. So everything from Rachel and Megan's book up to Death Slinger is, you know, that's a great reading evening for me. So,
well, you've definitely got a variety coming out. It is amazing that you have so many things coming out at the same time. That is awesome. Yeah,
congrats,
Shane,
to you.
And presumably even more to come would be my guess.
Yeah, like I said, we're literally like 8 pages in a cover away from Jason Volume 2, just a lot of other things in the works as well. So excited and humbled by all this. Thank you guys so much for all you do, for giving us as creators this platform to come on, spread the gospel of comics. So, we're all part of the team. So thank you. You guys are so instrumental and pivotal. And again, I just can't thank you enough.
Oh, Shane, that's so kind. Thank you so much for coming on. It was lovely seeing you.
Great seeing you, as always.
Great books. Congrats on everything. Yeah. It's awesome.
All right.
Well, thanks. Good night.
Bye, bye. Yeah. See you.
Take care of yourself. Till next time.
All right.
All right. There we go. So many things coming out from Shane Berryhill. You can check out Comic Books Kill, out August 9th. Jason and the Olympians, out July 26th. And Death Slinger is coming out in 2024. So there you go.
Yeah, just got to make it till then, man.
Oh, man, dark note to end on. The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kid series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more. But we're going to turn from a dark note to a positive one and kick off my favorite section, because you all make it up. It's your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is leave a question in the comments on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. But before we do that, Pete, you're right.
No.
I was going to ask you what you're drinking, but maybe I don't want to know.
It's it's the bottom of the cooler time. You know what I mean? Mm. It's the back of the fridge where maybe you got some beers that aren't as great, but you still got to drink them. You know what I mean?
Oh boy, what are you having so you can warn people away?
I don't know. It's this
Modelo. Oh, a Modelo.
Yeah, it's Modelo's a Modelo, but it's like a
it's a
lemon and salt Modelo, so it's a lot going on. There's I love a Modelo, but
yeah, get your own lemon. You can get a lime and a salt. A lime and a salt. What am I talking about?
I don't know.
Oh man, I gotta get off this water, buddy. It's really
Yeah. I hope you feel better soon, man.
Thank you very much. In any case, while we're waiting for questions from everybody, I'm gonna read one we got here from Twitter, actually. Oh, Omnia Solar would like to know, why does Justin hate us? It's because you're not paying him enough to be part of your family. They already established.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, he's. You know, if he's negotiating with his own family, imagine what he's doing with us. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. I'm going to read one from Twitter that we got a while back. This is from Andrew Softly. Read your reviews of every issue of Local Man. Can you recommend some favorite runs of actual 90s Image superhero books, which this one is referencing? I was actually hoping that Justin was going to be on the show because he feels like the ideal person to ask that.
Yeah.
But do you have any favorite, like, 90s Image comics that you go back to?
Oh, man.
Wildstorm, Gen 13, anything like that?
No, Eastman and Laird's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Usagi Yojimbo. That's where my 90s was.
Yeah, I feel like
the start and end of it.
The ones that the book, no, by the way, if you're not reading Local Man by Tim Seeley and Tony Fleeks, it's great. Yes. Really good. You don't need to know anything about 90s comics, though. It certainly helps. But Youngblood and Gen 13 are the two that I'd call out in particular that I think they're referencing very specifically throughout here. I'm sure there's more, but I wasn't a big 90s Image comics guy. Like, that was not necessarily my thing. It was, they were too paraded out. They're too big.
What's the one that Jordan D. White reads all the time with the
green Savage Dragon?
Yeah, Savage Dragon, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably a good one too. But you could read an issue of Savage Dragon that came out last week and get the sense of a 90s.
Still
it
hasn't feel like changed. Yeah.
It's like Domino's Pizza never changes. We got a couple of other questions here. This is from Pablo. That latest Blue Beetle trailer was great. What do you think?
Oh, man, I'm very excited for that movie. I love the cast. Love the original kind of, well, not the original, but the kind of Albuquerque run on it. So I'm really have high hopes for that. I think it's a hopefully... Does it right? You know what I mean? Could be the lone DC movie. That's.
Did you see the trailer? There was a new one that came out earlier today.
Yeah.
You have seen it. Okay. Yeah, I thought it was great too. I'm 100% on the same page as you. Where I'm like, this looks really fun, and I hope. I don't know. It's impossible for me to tell from the pulpit of our comic book talk show that we've been doing forever what normal people think about this sort of stuff, but like. I don't think they're going to lump it together with Black Adam, Shazam 2, and The Flash, and all the things that, like, bombed in theaters, you know? I think they're just, if it's a good, fun superhero movie, they're going to go for it. It looks fun. I like the family dynamics in the trailer. That seems good. I was like, I felt like they definitely showed off probably most of the arc of the movie in this trailer.
Yeah, that's a hard thing about watching trailers this late in it.
But it's all right. I like the lead. I like the cast. I'm into it.
And I also think, you know, Justin's original call about this being like DC Spider-Man is a great, great thing. And hopefully that becomes true. Stray Bullies pointed out the Darkness image from the 90s. That's also a good call.
That is a good one. This is also from Stray Bullies. What is that Loki 2 Netflix in your background, Alex? That has been there... since Loki season one. That's actually a box of Loki charms.
Yeah, that's old, man.
Yeah, that's old.
You shouldn't eat that, by the way. That's probably when you're not feeling well. I eat that box.
No. Every time I finish the show, I reward myself with a handful of Loki charm for the past year and a half, 2 years, something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
I'm sure it's not stale at all.
No, there's no cereal in it anymore.
Smart.
Yes, there you go. So that's what that is. This is from Mike Cancel. What were your favorite comics of the week this week? Mike, we have a show we do.
It's like a whole thing, Mike. You can't, Mike, tease the stack before the stack. You know,
comes
what I mean?
Out Wednesday, 9 a.m. I don't know if I've ever said this on the show before, but in its own dedicated stack feed as well as the comic book club feed.
I've never Wednesday, heard you say that phrase
There's the
before.
First time. How did that just roll off the tongue like that?
Wow, so smooth. Like you've been saying it for years.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Pete's going to definitely yell at me when you do the stack because I think we have 39 books that we're reviewing.
You fucking dick.
I'm sorry.
You're not sorry.
I am sorry.
No, you're not.
No.
No, you're not.
I've talked about this on the show before, but when I'm sending the books over to you, at first, like, legitimately, 100%, this is my reaction, where, like, I'll go publisher by publisher, and I'll be like, okay, so Image Comic Books came in first. Oh, there's a good amount of Image Comic Books. Okay, I'll try to be cognizant of that. Oh, let's add in the Dynamite and the IDW, the Dark Horse and all that. Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, no. Oh, no. Like, and I can feel this tightening in my chest as I see the stuff, because it's like, it's a mix. I try to make it a mix of number ones, because I think it's good to, like, talk about new issues.
Number ones, yeah.
So yeah, that's important. What we feel passionate about, like, yeah. What I know you're probably going to like, what Justin's probably going to like, what I'm probably going to like, try to mix that in there. Definitely try to concentrate on books where either we were mixed or positive from the previous issue. Mm-hmm. If we were negative two issues in a row, or just like, yeah, I don't know, then it gets cut out of the stack and I don't do it. But that ends up being a lot of stuff some weeks. And definitely the Marvel stuff always comes in last, where after already I've sent everything over, we get Marvel last, and I'm like, oh my God, that's 10 more books.
Yeah.
What are we doing here? I don't have the time for this.
And then what happens eventually with the stack is we start off being like, ah, talking about it. And by the last one, we're like, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, leave me alone. I got to go to sleep.
Yeah.
So apologies to whichever book is last in the stack, but we got a lot of them coming this week. Mike, I know we're putting you off, but we'll be talking about that very soon. Let's see.
But to answer real quickly, Night Terrors number one was one of my favorites that came out.
Yes, I think very briefly I will say, just because the DC comics are out today, I was a little iffy about Night Terrors the last week. Like, I liked it, but I didn't love it. Feeling much better about it this week. If you've been curious about it, definitely check out the ones that come out this week. There's a really good variance of them.
Oh my God, the covers are just unbelievable.
Very good. They're definitely, I've been taking my son to the comic book store, and last week I was like, we're skipping by this DC section now and walking. Don't look at those terrifying covers. This is from Kevin. Favorite superhero groups not from or based on comics? Favorite superhero groups, so, not from or so like Mystery Men.
Firefighters? Like, what are we talking about? I'm not sure.
Yeah, they're the real heroes.
They're the real heroes. Mm-hmm. Teachers and nurses.
Police officers, Pete? No.
Let's not, start any kind of something that maybe we shouldn't.
Wait, can I throw something out there that's side that I feel like only you will appreciate?
Sure.
So this weekend, while I was sick, I was in Boston hanging out with my wife's side of the family. And we ended up talking about New York pizza, and somebody mentioned that in Boston, there's a place called NYPD. No, maybe it's in Philly, actually, called NYPD, which is New York Pizza Department. And I was like, oh, they should probably be called ACAB. All calzones are bad.
Oh, and dude, you can't.
That fell so flat. Everybody looked at me. Nobody laughed. And I was like, I'm sorry, I take it back.
Yeah, wow.
Wrong company, also, I guess, on multiple
also,
levels.
Also, calzones are great. DP Dough, motherfucker. Come on.
I do
Ithaca.
Love DP Dough. DP
Ithaca, Dough, dude. Yes, represent a little
I'm
bit.
Sorry, I'm
Jesus,
sorry.
Jesus, let's go, Cornell.
I was always more of a hot truck man, Pete.
No, come on. PMP, man? Poor Man's Pizza? Who are you talking to?
So good.
I probably got more hot truck than you did, bro.
Almost definitely. But I did. My dorm freshman year was right by hot truck. So I was like, I'll get some.
That's great living right there.
It really was. Well, I think we've answered Kevin's question. With a bunch of nonsense that's only for you and me.
Yeah. That's always fun for people listening at home.
Yep. I don't know. Mystery Men, I guess, is the only thing I can think of as favorite superhero groups not from or based on comics. Is there anything else? Probably.
I would have to really think about that a little bit because I'm not sure. Yeah. Oh, Pablo's talking about pizza. I was like, the pizza delivery guy, but I was reading it fast. I didn't know.
Here's a question. Well, why don't we go to this one? Maybe we can't answer this one either. But the big says, hi, guys. Have you seen the new Indiana Jones? Thoughts? I loved it. Any thoughts about why it's not a hit at the box office? Pete, have you checked out the new Indiana Jones?
Yes, I did.
What'd you think?
Parents wanted to go see it, so we all went as a family, so that was really fun. I loved it, man. I had some little emotional moments there. I thought the callback to the original Raiders was so cool. I just I don't know. Maybe because Crystal Skull sucks so bad that people were like, I'm not doing this again. I don't know what people's deal is, but yeah, I thought it was great.
Well, I will say, I do have an opinion on a couple of reasons it probably hasn't doing as well at the box office. One of them I do think is Crystal Skull, where it's not just that people are like, eh, on the movie, but the fact was it wrapped up Indiana Jones. Like, it was very clearly set up as like, well, and here's the final Indiana Jones movie. Yep. So I don't think there was anybody who was like, ooh, what's the rest of the story? Because there wasn't. He passed on the hat kind of to Shia LaBeouf, and he got married and he got a happy ending and they were done with Indiana Jones. And now they're coming back now. So there's that.
Yeah, level, but they continue from that point. It's not
totally.
Like, they
I know how sequels work. I get that.
Well, fuck you, dude. I'm just letting you know.
I
don't even know if you've seen it.
I literally just said I haven't seen it. I'm saying from the outside perspective, I think why people were hesitant to go see it at the box office is they felt done with it. And to have it come back again, there wasn't necessarily that nostalgia play because there wasn't that pent-up demand. We already finished that. You add in that, and I'm including ourselves in that, there is an aging audience in that, right? So yeah. An older audience, in general, and the audiences are having trouble with, like, should I actually go to the theater or should I just wait 45 days or 30 days or legitimately like Asteroid City is now out 3 weeks later on VOD. So why would I bother seeing that in theaters when I could watch it in the comfort of my own home? That is becoming a factor in every decision in terms of going to the movie. So for older audiences, definitely it's like, I'll get to see it later. Oh, it didn't do that well at the box office and the reviews weren't that great. All right, I'll just catch it on streaming. That's fine. So that just becomes the equation there. That's the other part of it, is like Disney brought it to Cannes and the reviews out of Cannes were not good. Later on, I've heard a lot more people like yourself who were like, yeah, it was super fun. I had a fun time at the movie theater. But those initial reviews, that was clearly the wrong venue to put it in. It's like, this is this storied film festival. And that put sort of a sour note over it very early. So when you have okay reviews from a franchise that everybody was not necessarily asking to come back, when the option is to watch it later for free, technically, asterisk at home, that's what a lot of people are going to choose. So it's not doing god awfully, but it's really not doing well. And I think that's a large part of the reason.
Yeah, interesting.
So there you go. But I do legitimately want to see it at some point because I've heard from so many people that, like, A, they had fun seeing it, and also that apparently the ending is just wild in terms of the swings they take.
Big time. So, yeah, there's some real laugh out loud moments. But also, I think they do a good job of being like, yes, that was where they kind of left the story, but it this movie doesn't ignore Crystal Skull, but it doesn't exactly, you know, kind of like it continues from Crystal Skull on. There's things that happen that kind of like they go with. So, yeah, I think they did a good job.
Yeah. I will probably see it. My son has been interested in watching the Indiana Jones movies after 3 or 4 years ago, seeing a little bit of Raiders and screaming and sobbing and crying.
Oh, man.
So he seems into it again. So
I mean, that's tough because those movies definitely scarred me as a kid. You know, like the first time I saw the Anumshi by, like, I couldn't sleep for a while.
Yeah, I've been in front of him ripping hearts out of different larger creatures every day to get him, you know, revved up for it.
Smart. You're a great father, dude.
Thank you. We're up to alligators at this point.
Wow.
Follow up on the previous ask, Michael Tilby wants to know, is it an all night terror stack episode? No. Great question. I will say
there is a bunch of night terror.
There is a bunch of
stack.
Night terror is what we're trying to do, like what we did with
You're
Future
doing it
State.
A block. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. What we did with Future State last year, which I think is interesting to look at, like we read every Future State book and went through all of those. We're doing the same thing right now with Night Terrors. We'll see if it keeps up, if they continue to be good. But I always think it's interesting to look at an event as a whole and see how it pans out. Mike Cancel wants to know, what day of the week do you start reading those 39 books? I will say in general with the stack, this was bad because I was away this weekend, so I sent the stuff late, so I apologize, Pete. But usually I will try to start reading them on Sunday and whittle away at it and then read whatever else I can Monday night. And if things are coming super late, I'll try to chip away with them on Tuesday. So yeah, it's really at least a 3-day process every week reading the books for me.
Yeah, I start Monday and then spend a lot of my day today. It's a lot, man.
It's a lot, but it's worth it.
Yeah, definitely. You kidding me?
Yeah, there you go. Question from Stray Bullet. What was that Ben Stiller movie? It was Mystery Men. Thank you, Stray Bullet. This is a good one. Michael Tillman says maybe the Incredibles originated on screen. Yes, that is probably the best superhero team that didn't originate in comics. I can go for that. What do you think, Pete?
Yeah, that's a great call. Incredibles is a fantastic, and they, you know, they've gotten comics that spawn from that mm-hmm. have been enjoyable. Yeah, that's a great call. Thank you, Michael Tillman.
Here's a great thought experiment from Pablo. Imagine if the pizza department was a real thing. What would you do with that if there was a New York pizza department, Pete?
Well, I almost feel like there should be because, you know, that way there would be some kind of, somebody kind of like looking over the pizza in New York and being like, mm-hmm. hey, you know, like official thumbs up, thumbs down type of scenario where like the pizza department gave this a thumbs up. You know, it's like, oh, I'll check it out, you know.
Mm. I was about to make some very inappropriate jokes, which I won't.
Well, yeah, please don't do that.
Absolutely not. This is a very general question, but I think I know what they're getting at. Monk 4202004 says Secret Invasion. Assuming what's our opinion on Secret Invasion so far? Not to keep plugging other podcasts, but on Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, we've been recapping Secret Invasion. So you can check out our recaps in that feed for
it past. It sucks so far, though. Monk, just to let you know, it sucks so far. It's heartbreaking to see Fury suck at his job and every woman on the show is dying. It's not fun. It's not fun, but I'm hoping there's going to be some Shyamalan twist at the end that's going to make totally redeem itself.
I really am. I feel a little like Charlie Brown with the football because we're on the eve of another episode. And right now I'm like, maybe I'll wake up at 5 and it'll be good.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I love the hope.
It's really, I'm really pulling for them to turn it around, but I'm not expecting it at this point. We'll see. And we got one last question here. When you have 39 books in the stack, do you read anything else not in the stack? Pete?
Sometimes, but not this week. Yeah. When the stack's that deep, it's hard.
I mean, Pete will know this in advance. Don't say what it is, Pete. I think you'll have a pretty fair idea. There was one book that I was like, ooh, I want to read that book. If I don't put it in the stack, I'm not going to read it. So I'm going to put it in the stack so that I read it. The short answer is like, no, I don't. I mean, I read other things. I read books during the week. But 39 comics in 3 days is a lot of comics. So there you go. Yeah. But there you go. Thank you so much for all your questions. We appreciate it. We are going to move to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. This is the part we give back to the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. Because if you had $25, you go to the comic book shop. Why not raise your hand, say first hand up, say me, you can participate in the trivia. I'm assuming we don't have somebody picked out ahead of time because otherwise you would have said something.
Ooh, we got Pablo.
Pablo fan favorite showing up.
All right. Pablo, all you got to do is reply in the comments.
Yep.
And you're definitely going to win $25.
All right, great. All right, so it should be fun. Okay, today's trivia is some topical comic news and a small nod to the legend, Alan Arkin, R.I.P. All right, please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. Skybound is bringing back Larry Hama to write which comic? Is it A, G.I. Joe Real American Hero, B, G.I. Jane, keep your wife's name out of your mouth, or is it C, Tammy Grimes? So, Pablo, All you need to do is just write down A there and we can move on, because Larry Hama is famous for G.I. Joe, as we all know. So great, great. Nice job, Pablo. You are correct. It is a Larry Hama being brought back by Skybound. I'm very excited about it. Cannot wait. Legendary writer. Here we go. Question number two. Scott Snyder and Rafael Albuquerque are teaming back up for what new comic? Is it A, Duck and Cover, B, Tell That to Chris Rock, or C, Ed Peck? Which one do you think it is, Pablo? Oh my God, you want to say A again? That is correct. Nice job, Pablo. Really appreciate it. All right, here we go. Last one, Pablo. The History of DC will stream a three-part docuseries on what platform? Is it A, Max? B, you thought it was messed up for Max to drop the HBO, think about the Smiths marriage counselors going through, or is it C, Theodore Gottlieb? What's that, Pablo? It's A again. You're correct, Pablo. You're killing it. Oh, man. A's across the board. Pablo getting straight A's. Appreciate you showing your support, Pablo. There we go. There we go. Hey, it's Sarah Schaefer.
Great. And what's your secret?
Of course, I'm talking about the 1982 classic, The Last Unicorn.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Good shout out. Great. Pablo, shoot us an email and we are going to get you a gift certificate. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Gift card to Midtown gift Comics.
Yeah, there you go.
Thanks. There you go.
Why don't we, before we wrap up here, talk about what we're looking forward to in comic book stores. Pete, I know we've mentioned a couple of things already, but what are you most excited about that's out this week?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to is a team up of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
And what else? What else? No, that one really freaked me out. No, not so much that one. I would say Panya the Mummy's Curse also was very interesting and unique. So I love that one as well.
There is a ton, as you can probably tell from the amount of books we're talking about, ton of interesting stuff that's coming out this week. I'll give a shout out to Fish Flies number one from Image Comics.
Dude, so creepy.
Well,
so
Jeff Lemire. The free comic book day issue came out, which was the first half of this book, and it was gross and uncomfortable and creepy, so I'm very curious to check out the rest of that. Night Terrors, as I mentioned, really enjoyed the stuff that came out this week. I'll also give a shout out to the Lonesome Hunters, The Wolf Child number one. This is a series from Tyler Crook.
Yeah, dude.
About an old man with a giant sword and the girl he's teaming up with to fight some birds.
Going back and forth on that one because it's like it scared me, but I still liked it so much. But the ending really freaked me out, but I was still.
It's basically, and I say this completely complimentary, it's basically The Goon meets Hellboy. Very
but good. Also some spooky shit in there, which The Goon deals with a lot of times. But yeah, like that lasting image of that kind of like, I think it's like,
well, don't spoil it. No, it hasn't come out yet. All of those books, though, and many, many more are going to be in our Stack podcast this week. So definitely check that out at the time aforementioned. And that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Shane Berryhill for coming on. Don't forget to check out Comic Books Kill, Jason the Olympians, and Death Slinger. Also, Megan Bowman and Rachel Briner. Don't forget to check out Dear Rosie, which is out today. Next week on the show, Jeff Ryan is going to be here to talk about Father and Son Issues, The Secret History of Spider-Man. A couple of other podcasts you can check out. Sons of a Gun, our DC podcast. You can check that out for DC reviews and news. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. As mentioned, we are recapping Secret Invasion right now. Riverdale After Dark is off this week, as Riverdale is off this week, but we will be back with recaps with that as we head towards the series finale. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram or TikTok, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
What's up, David Quinley? Thanks for giving us a shout out.
They sit on crappy couches and they let the secrets leak. And occasionally they let that special guest speak. So grab your grin hair.